Larry Kleinman, welcome to the second part of our two-part interview on immigration.
Thanks, Bill. Great to be here again.
Larry knows immigration and farm work. He was co-founder of Picun, Oregon's farm work organization, for 35 years and counting. He spent a lot of time all over the state on the ranches and farms organizing, and in Woodburn helping to run the organization. In his spare time, he lobbied the Oregon legislature, he did countless trainings, developed farm worker housing around Woodburn, raised money, developed legal support organizations, and established radio, what are your call letters?
KPCNLP, Radio Movimiento, 95.9 FM.
Repeat, KP?
KPCN, like Pecun.
Oh,
LP, low right. power, established in 2006.
They're a Spanish language station with a very large audience because of its reports and alerts about anti-immigration action and enforcement. Then over the last 5 years, Picun is transitioning to new day-to-day leadership, and Larry, while still advising and working in Woodburn, has been working on the national scene. So Larry, give us a sense of all your work today.
So the national scene that I'm on more now, I'm in D.C. about half-time, and also moving around the country. I work with a network of immigrant rights organizations like Pecun and Causa in 35 states. And my role is to advise them on how to build their programs, their strategies to defend immigrants, especially now that we're dealing with the threat of mass removals, mass deportations, mass arrests.
Part of that is working at the state level, trying to stop the cruelest kinds of enforcement, also working at the state level and the national level on legislation and policy and the sort of the direction of the various agencies.
My role in that is a step or two removed, but I'm engaged in various of those arenas. I think the most important role I play now nationally is to work with immigrant rights leaders, many of whom are newer to this work, to politics, to legal defense, to the many things that Pecun and before it the Willamette Valley Immigration Project, our trajectory of development took us through many of those stages. Mm-hmm. Now folks, in many cases, sadly, we are revisiting, having to rebuild or build anew these kinds of capacities. That's where I have valuable
right.
experience.
And also, I guess, how to work in the fields and in the cities and in the industries. Organizing is a major part of every one of these organizations, is getting a Latino community alert and active and struggling.
There's brilliant work going on. There's innovative work. There's work I couldn't imagine. I'm not the right person to lead or advise. But on the other hand, what we know is this work is cyclical. We've been in periods of crisis before. There were particular characteristics to it then, and there are others now, but there are things about it that have to do with how do we shape our expectations? What are the strategies we're using in which I can actually offer some useful ideas?
Let's talk about the big national picture now as corporate America is being squeezed. Many, many industries are being squeezed by the lack of labor and the lack of labor that they need. And they want to get that labor. They have to have it or they lose huge amounts of money in production.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the Republican Party who has ginned up this immigration scare. Parts of it seem to be, we've discussed it before, are really adamant. Tell us the story of what's happening in policy circles in the states, I suspect, especially the agricultural states, and the national government.
It is amazing to behold what started in the Tea Party movement most recently as the Republican establishment embracing that for its pushback effects and potential on the agenda that they didn't want of the Obama administration and anything more progressive than that, now has become a force that they really can't control. One of the key accelerants of that, in my view, and it's a totally different discussion for another day, is gerrymandering, by which I mean the fact that there are so many congressional districts now that are so much of one party, in this case, Republicans, that the Republican primary has become the general election. And the Tea Party has become very effective in challenging establishment power in the Republican Party in these primaries. And so what you have is members of Congress starting, I would say, most noticeably 3 years ago, who are deathly afraid not of being unelected in the general election by a Democrat, but being unseated for the nomination by a Republican candidate in the primary. And so if you have a ginned up base the so-called Trump voters, the most vociferous ones, and they're hearing the call of white supremacy, a white restoration, of get the brown people out of here, don't allow any more brown people in this country. They are an organized political force. They are incredibly potent in the Republican primary, and that's what is challenging the establishment. Yeah,
and one other thing I think that is promised by this policy is they're going to get good jobs again. Somehow we're going to return to the good old days when we could work for a decent wage, raise our family, and be respected on the streets by all of these lower people who are somehow in the neighborhoods.
And in many rural communities, actually return to a vibrant or more vibrant economy on Main Street. There are thousands of towns in rural Iowa, in central Pennsylvania, and many places around where first you had Main Street hollowed out, so you had many vacant establishments, vacant buildings. Then you had gradually a trickling in of immigrant communities who started small businesses. Many of those small businesses served the immigrant community, but they were paying rent to the landlords, who were the traditional folks in that community or the longstanding beacons of establishment. So the economy is doing a little better in some of these places, and folks are glad to be there. They're not really asking for anything specifically, the new arrivals. But the social transformation, those traditionalists can feel it coming. And combined with what you described as the lack of economic security and the lack of social standing is a poisonous brew. That is now poisoning Republican politics to ways in which the powers that be, the chambers of commerce, the grower associations, even now high tech, never imagined could happen.
They've lost control. That whole establishment now is lost control of the party and of policy, and particularly of immigration policy.
So this is then accelerated by the campaign of fear. So suddenly immigrants aren't coming to those places because they're afraid. And rightly so, right? They're rightly so to be afraid.
They can be easily, much more easily picked off than in a big city.
And the social setting is more hostile, right, than in a big city neighborhood maybe, where there's a critical mass. And so the industry owners, the slaughterhouses in western Iowa.
These big companies.
Who have depended on this labor, then are being squeezed by the enforcement regime. Wow. That's a recipe for bankruptcy.
And the farmers in Oregon, they're having trouble getting labor, I guess. Mm-hmm. Are the wages going up in the fields? I guess they probably are.
Yeah, I'm not as in touch with that day-to-day anymore, but broadly, I think there's upward pressure on wages. Another thing, of course, happening is the number of apprehensions at the border are way down, way down. There were more people apprehended, Bill, in October, 1 month, October last year, than in the entire span of 4 months, February through May. 4 months equal to 1 month. Here, another statistic that floored me that I just heard the other day, the immigration apparatus, the Border Patrol and ICE, are the biggest law enforcement organization in the nation, or if in the federal government, bigger than all the others combined, a correct statistic. There are 17,000 agents assigned to the southern border. They arrested 14,000 people in the month of May. That's less than one arrest per agent for the entire month, right? What are these folks doing, right? I mean, are they the in the old commercial cliche of the Maytag repairman, the guy sitting there with nothing to do, right? And then they want 5,000 more? Like, to do what exactly?
Yeah, right. Well, they have to repair their own cars, which are always breaking. And I mean, they have this huge apparatus. Look at the Army. The number of fighters is relatively small in comparison to this whole logistical
apparatus to keep it all going. anyway, so I think that the number of people coming in the country is less. So the transitory labor, you could call it, some people call it migrant labor, but the casual labor, the transitory labor, the contingent labor is under, that market is under great pressure.
And what's happening in politics now, where all of these companies are finding themselves under enormous pressure, actually it must be, they see themselves being unable to produce. And their expenses are going up enormously. I mean, to some extent, because they have to offer people a lot more money.
Well, so there's two responses. If your business is a business that can be relocated to some other location, that's what you're probably doing. High tech is a great example, right? So the high tech visas are also affected by this trend. There's incredible pressure to reduce the number of high-tech visas for the computerized industries. So what is Microsoft doing? They're expanding the shop that they've set up in Vancouver, British Columbia, because they have a better arrangement through the Canadian government. They're setting up more operations in Asia, so they don't have to bring people here at all.
Oh.
But if you're a farm, you're a dairy farmer in Idaho, right? You are not moving your dairy to Alberta. Or I don't know, maybe you could try to sell your dairy and go buy one in Alberta. I don't know. But that's a way easier said than done, right? And if you don't have workers on the job every day milking those cows, your cows die in a matter of days and your entire operation collapses. And so the dairy operators in Idaho, for example, who for the longest time felt that they were the kings of the political hill in the Republican Party, which totally dominates politics in the state of, in most parts of the state of Idaho, suddenly find themselves completely vulnerable. And there's a level of freak out and anxiety that I think I have never seen, even in 40 years in the time that I've had working around.
And it's not just these dairy farmers where the cows die in a couple of days, but also berries rot in a couple of days, and agricultural products, they're fragile. And
perishable.
Yeah.
So the kind of fear that we saw in the growers' eyes in 1995 when we attempted to foment a general strike in the strawberry harvest to get a crop-wide wage increase, which we basically achieved. We didn't achieve the strike, we achieved the increase. That kind of fear that I saw in their eyes is the fear I see today, Bill. And they're not afraid of us. They're not afraid of worker organizing. That's not what's putting the pressure on as it did so acutely in the 90s. What they're afraid of is their own party that has been taken over by the closed, shut the doors, no more immigration, get rid of the folks that are here, politics, depriving them of their labor supply.
This is KBOO Radio, Portland, Oregon. Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole Variety Hour, talking immigration policy today with Larry Kleinman, one of the co-founders of Pekun, the Oregon Farm Workers Union, work there in the fields and building Pekun for 35 years or so in Oregon. For the last couple of years, he's transitioned to spending half time in Woodburn and the other half traveling around the country, and especially being in Washington, D.C., advising immigration rights and organizations on how to deal with the political climate and to organize all of the issues that face poor communities. Larry, we were talking about the immense pressure now within the Republican Party that the corporate sector has lost the battle, at least up until now, to keep their immigrant workers that they desperately, undocumented and documented, that they desperately need to this immigration scare that's been ginned up. My sense was, before talking to you today, that they were going to be able to come up with some kind of slave labor program, like the Bracero program of the 50s, where immigrant labor was brought in on buses, deposited in hovels on farms, and were utterly dependent on the owner, who basically had a slave population, and then shipped back from time to time. Everybody terrorized and basically and working for very, very low wages. But it doesn't appear that the Republican Party can agree on that. Is that what you're pointing out?
Yeah, that's exactly what the reality is right now, the state of play. Now, it's hard to say what will happen in such unstable politics, but I have to say, Bill, that this force that thought it was so uppermost and essential, that by which I mean the growers and their political influence, are getting no traction on Capitol Hill. They're getting no bills that do exactly what you just described in a fashion, even if they try to cover with a fig leaf. There are sworn enemies of any kind of immigration, legal, undocumented, temporary, inhabiting the highest positions of influence in the White House and in the immigration apparatus.
They won't even let European labor from Poland and Romania come in, Russia?
That discussion hasn't started yet that I know of. They're all in favor of white people immigrating, but they get it that the way the system is now, does not advantage that. So their sort of knee-jerk reaction to that, or their immediate reaction to that, is let's shut down the system as it is now. Exactly how they would redesign it to expressly advantage white people is sort of another chapter that, I mean, it's early days in all this still. Uh-huh. But nonetheless, their agenda is shut it down. Shut down arrival of temporary workers, shut down arrival of permanent residents, cut it in half. Let's reduce the number of people applying for citizenship, and let's get rid of the people that are here now.
That can't last. It's completely unsustainable. That labor is all by the various industries. You described earlier Microsoft is now expanding their plant in British Columbia in order to be able to import people from China and India, probably.
Exactly.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
these technical workers mm-hmm. that they've come to depend on. I was thinking, you would too, that they might also go to Mexico or, in fact, just set up in China and India, which is what they've also been doing.
Well, I think there's different parts. I think their engineering function is more the British Columbia.
Oh, yeah.
Production is all in China
right.
already and has been for decades. The reason, of course, it's for Vancouver, it's right there by Redmond, Washington. You know,
right.
It's just right
so
across the border. I mean, it's quite convenient for
you
them.
Can telecommute, but it's just not quite as good as having a meeting sometimes. Yeah.
And they have a critical mass of workers now there, and they've been building that for a while because they saw the instability handwriting on the wall. I think they did not imagine that it would get to these extremes.
So in fact, this whole policy is now costing American jobs. This is another source of outsourcing and of leaving the country.
The reality that Republicans generally, and the anti-immigrant Republicans in particular, don't want to acknowledge is how much of a driver of economic growth immigration is. Immigration and immigrants are, whether it's small business in a particular dying community or large corporations. And corporations, of course, what they want to be able to do is move their money around and move their workers around with as few limitations as possible. And the anti-immigration wing ascendancy in the Republican Party is really putting a crimp in their style.
What's the future look like in terms of immigration policy? It is unsustainable. What are the possible scenarios, and how can progressives and the left influence it?
God, it's really hard to tell how this movie's going to turn out, because this is, I mean, you got to believe that there has to be a come to Moses, as I like to say. I'm not one of those come to Jesus folks. There has to be a come to Moses inside the Republican Party, but that's has already been building for a while, and it's still getting worse. It's still getting more extreme, more polarized. So I think until we see what's going to happen to Trumpism and the Trump phenomenon, I think that immigration is part and parcel of that. Of course, he made that central to his run. So we got to see what happens to him, the opposition to him, the disenchantment with him, the resistance to him, the withdrawal of support. So some of corporate America that said, well, okay, we'll try to live with the guy because he's a Republican. And as FDR once said, he's our SOB, you know. But when they get to their breaking point, how is their pullback going to express itself in a way that displaces or dislodges him? So until we see that, I think we're hard-pressed to predict what will happen on immigration. Meanwhile, however, states like California are going to build the most supportive environment they possibly can. And I wouldn't even rule out the possibility of an attempt to take to the Supreme Court the proposition that states could issue their own visas, even though it seems to me it's patently unconstitutional.
I guess one other part of that, besides working in the states to fight the immigration policies and make room for immigrants and immigrant labor, there's still the necessity in every community, and I'm sure you see it, to organize on the ground for both self-defense, for mutual help in communities, as well as politically to, and in California, well, they've already done it, unseat them in at least the state legislature and probably in the congressional delegation, mm-hmm. and places like Texas, which some people think is going to be purple and then blue fairly soon. But how do you really develop a progressive majority that will do anything? Because the Latin community right now is sort of united, but at some point, all of the class tensions are going to express themselves.
I totally agree with that. And I think in the short run, I think the big question is overreach. Will the overreach caused by the anti-immigrant wing, for one hand, the chaos of Trump, the repeal of the ACA, the roll-up of all of that. Once it begins to bite, especially in places that were supportive of Trump and that support starts to erode, how do the politics shift? We all know that Trump did not win a sweeping landslide, and quite the opposite, actually. So the tipping point could be a lot closer than we imagine. And then in places like Texas, we saw in California, California was not always the progressive bulwark that it is today. In fact, it was Republican dominated for decades, and they overreached on the issue of immigration at a particularly inconvenient moment, it turned out for them. Question is whether the similar trajectory will be seen in Texas and how long it will take.
And a lot of that, of course, depends on the situation of the still plurality white working class. And if the whole economy begins tanking, they could well be organized, some at least could be organized into a vicious xenophobic sort of
absolutely
of force. Everybody has to unite around a very different kind of economy. And then there's, of course, global climate change, which is going to affect every industry, particularly agriculture, in bad ways. I think we're looking at a really troubled sort of future in the next 20, 30, 50 years for
Global climate change is going to scramble agriculture. It's going to help agriculture in some places and totally decimate it in others.
Yeah.
And it's also going to scramble immigration as folks live in unsustainable environments, you know, even from going from minimally sustainable to completely unsustainable, uninhabitable, in fact. Today, the day we're recording this, planes couldn't take off from Phoenix because it was too hot. Wow. There's a sign for you.
Yeah. Larry Kleinman, thanks a lot for your work and for talking to us today.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate the opportunity and a big supporter of KBOO.
It's a hard line when you're an import, baby boy. It's hard times when you ain't sent for braces. Feed the belly of the beast with they pitchforks. Rich chores done by the people that get ignored. Ya se armó, ya se despertaron. It's a whole awakening. La alarma ya sonó hace rato. Los que quieren buscan, pero nos apodan como vagos. We're the same ones hustling on every level. Ten los datos. Walk a mile in our shoes. Abróchense los zapatos. I've been scoping y'all dudes. Y'all ain't been working like I do. Why y'all work ya? It hurts ya. You claim I'm stealing jobs. Oh, Peter Piper claimed he picked them. He just underpaid Pablo. But there ain't a paper trail when you living in the shadows. We America's ghost riders. The credit's only borrowed. It's a matter of time before the checks all come. But
immigrants, we get the job done. Look how far I come. Look how far I come. Look how far I come. We get the job done. Look how far I come. Look how far I come. Look how far I come. Immigrants, we get the job.
Yeah.
You heard Immigrants, We Get the Job Done with Snow the Product from Lin-Manuel Miranda's Hamilton mixtape. And you also heard from Bill Resnick and Larry Kleinman. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM and the Old Mole Variety Hour. You can donate to Paneros y Campesinos Unidos del Noroeste, PECUN's ICE raid resistance efforts by going to the website PECUN.org, PCUN.org,